Good evening and welcome to Writers on Writing. I am your host, Dr. Brenda Green, and I'm coming to you from Megar Evers College. Writers on Writing comes to you each Sunday and gives you, our listening audience, an opportunity to hear writers talk about their work, their craft, and their lives. And this radio broadcast is paid for by Megar Evers College. I'm very, very pleased to have with me this evening, a writer and a musician. Ahmed Abdullah is both a writer and a musician. And Monique Ngozi Nnuri is a singer, a writer, and a singer. So I'm going to let them tell you more about themselves. But I am founder and executive director of the Center for Black Literature, director of the National Black Writers Conference. And we're very excited to be having this conversation because we're talking about a phenomenal book, A Strange Celestine Road, which is written by Ahmed Abdullah with Luis Reyes Rivera. And it's the subtitle is A Strange Celestial Road, My Time in the Sun Ra Orchestra. So before we continue, let me have Ahmed Abdullah tell you a little bit about himself and then Monique.
Oh, we can begin with the fact that I did work with the Sun Ra Orchestra from 1975 until approximately 1995. I have my own ensemble, which is called Diaspora. That's an acronym meaning Dispersions of the Spirit of Ra. I compose music. I also am an educator. I teach both on the elementary school level at a school in Bedford-Stuyvesant named PS3, and I work at the New School
It's
for
6 o'clock.
Jazz and Contemporary Music, teaching a course on the music and philosophy of Sun Ra. I met Monique 31, 32 years ago in London while I was touring with the Sun Ra Band, and we have a child who is 22 years old, and we are very proud of her. So.
Thank you, Ahmed. Monique.
Yes, so as Ahmed said, we met at a club in Soho, a jazz club, and I have been a non-fiction writer on the music and the arts. I began then, and I've continued to do that. As you say, I'm a poet and a vocalist. I play with the band Diaspora and every iteration of Ahmed's music since I came to live here. I'm also at this point a professor of an adjunct professor of English at Brooklyn College. I also work at Brooklyn College. So together we have a company called Melchizedek Music Productions, which we have used to bring the music of the spirit back into Brooklyn.
Thank you. So both of you really represent what has really happened in the arts of blending music and literature and performance together. And that's the direction we are at now. Probably it's not a new phenomenon, but something that I see more and more of, and it's really interdisciplinary. But I want to start, Ahmed, would you tell us how you came to be part of the band of Sun Ra, the Sun Ra Orchestra? But first, before we begin that, tell us about Sun Ra, because I speak to, when I told people about the book, many of the people who know about him are in my age group, but there's a whole other group that doesn't know about him. And I was sharing with one of my the artists. She's actually the owner of an art store, about how he represents Afrofuturism, which has been here for years. And he was one of our early Afrofuturists. So tell
Right.
us about who he is what the Sun Ra Orchestra is and how you came to be a part of it.
Well, I would say that Sun Ra represents Afrofuturism because he always said that he was creating the music for the 21st century. And the fact that this book has now been published, I wrote it really 25 years ago, but the fact that it's been published now, it'll be published as of October, is indicative of the fact that there may be some truth in what he was saying. I started working with him in 1975, and the first performance I did with him was at a place called The East, which is on 10 Claver Place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Remember and, The East.
The East, right? Yes. And I got to work with him because I was working with a band that was 50% made up of people who had worked with him. And if you know anything about Sun Ra, it's really a family, metaphorically family-oriented band. I mean, if someone in the band is playing somewhere and they have a relationship with the band usually would show up. And so I played in Philadelphia in 1974, and Sun Ra was living in Philadelphia, and we played at a park in Germantown, and the entire band came out to hear us, and my number was taken, and a year later, I was given a call and asked to be a part of the ensemble, and that was in 1975, and that lasted until 1995. You know, or thereabouts, yeah, even later than that, actually. But so it's Sun Ra had a conceptual understanding of this country having arrived on the planet, and he talked about not being born or dying. He talked about arriving and departing as spiritual beings that we are, and so he arrived in Birmingham, Alabama, in 1914. And of course, he called Birmingham, Alabama, the capital of the Confederacy. So and he spent the first 32 years of his life in Birmingham, Alabama. Yeah. So he had a real solid understanding of what that apartheid system was there and how one could mitigate it against it. And so but he didn't really do anything about that until he went to Chicago. He went to Chicago in 1946, and he started working with a person named Fletcher Henderson, who was his idol. And he worked. He managed to get a job working with Fletcher Henderson on one of the last years of his life, in fact. And he worked at a place called the Club de Lisa with him and did floor shows and you know, became a really, really great musician. He was already a great musician before that, but he became even a greater musician.
Right. Having,
Go ahead.
One of the strengths of this book and the highlights is all the people you meet, all the musicians. I said the book is really for a lover of artists. And of course, I think it's a very courageous book because it integrates your own personal life and your own personal experiences with your journey with Sun Ra. So why don't we begin with how this really ends up reflecting not only your encounter with Sun Ra, but your own personal life. And we'll have Monique also reflect on that.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Harlem. And I grew up in, I came on the planet in 1947.
Came to the planet, just like Esther. Yes, you arrived.
I arrived on the planet in 1947, yeah. Right. And in Harlem, and the Harlem of the 1940s and 1950s and 1960s, I spent some time in Harlem in the 1960s, was a very different place. I've really come to understand, even since I've written a book, how great Harlem was, but the music was in the atmosphere of Harlem during that period of time, and so one couldn't help to pick up on certain things. I had a sister who was 10 years older than me, who introduced me to the music, and she introduced me by way of playing records in the house. And so those records were very, very, very strongly embedded in my beingness. And one in particular was a record called Dinah Jams with Clark Terry, Maynard Ferguson, and Clifford Brown playing with Max Roach and Dinah Washington singing. And I, you know, would listen to that recording over and over again as she played it. And unfortunately, my sister left the planet. She died of a botched abortion in around 1961. Interestingly enough, I had been accepted to Brooklyn Tech in 1961. And she brought me to the place that she was working at and celebrated me and, you know, brought me around to her friends. And then she was dead. And so I was left with this feeling of, what am I supposed to do with this? And the only thing that I could do was to play music. And I bought my first trumpet from a pawn shop in Harlem for $35. And I paid for lessons because my parents were very poor. They couldn't afford any of that. And of course, they were grieving. This was their oldest daughter who had died. So they kind of like let me do what I wanted to do. And I wanted to play music. And so that's what I did.
Right. So this became a way of healing. That was your way of healing.
It was my way of, my way of dealing with that loss. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, but it has to be said that healing process took a long time. When I met Ahmed at Ronnie Scott's, I actually wrote an article on him, which is called The Real Ambassadors, after the Louis Armstrong Project, The Real Ambassadors. And he said at the time that it was one of the best interviews he'd ever done. And I was living in London at the time. But over the course of the years, I think on page 104 of the book, he says, I had had a long reputation in the Sun Ra Orchestra for hawking women. Sun Ra had, in fact, dog tagged me, Danny Pico Thompson, and a couple of others, guys in the band, as the Romance Boys. So I have no idea what I was doing getting together with one of the Romance Boys. But he says also in that passage, though, up until then, he had never really said anything to me. As I advanced further along the path, I realized that the objective of my incarnation is to learn through women.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the things that comes through very clearly in the essence of the book, is the lessons that Ahmed has learned as my partner, but also in other relationships from women as to how to be on the planet. He was one of the few people who I'd ever met, for example, who had read Toni Morrison. He had read Alice Walker. He had read Tony K. Bambara. He had also been to Festac, which is my father's homeland in Nigeria. So he was a very unusual person, particularly for somebody from the Americas, because he was not at all concerned with only being in this part of the world. He really is somebody who has been engaged with the African diaspora, and this is what his story shows as he goes through his life. So in terms of the personal, I think he's brutally honest also.
Yes.
He tells the truth with some integrity about who he has been, but also who he has become during
right, the how he has evolved. And as you said, he celebrates women. And that is not something you've seen. Anyone who I've talked to the book about, when I tell the stories, everyone wants to hear about it. It's important that we hear stories, because you tell stories that people whisper about or talk among themselves about, but they don't hear what it means to be an artist, what it means to be someone who is on the road, on tour all the time. What is the impact of drugs and the drugs and the alcohol and the lifestyle? How does that impact you emotionally and spiritually? And as I said, people need to understand that and to help to realize what it means to be an artist and to have that passion. Yeah, well, you know, that came across very strongly.
That's wonderful. I think also that you were talking in the beginning about the interdisciplinary realities that we're experiencing now. And I believe it's really necessary. The arts are the way that the only truth-telling methodology that we have available to us. Artists have to tell the truth. If you are going to be who you are, if you're going to be an artist, you got to be able to go deep within and understand that whatever you may have been experiencing, that's not all you are. And so the fact is, and we're in a place and a position and time in this country where if artists don't step up, we may not even have a country. We may not even have a place to live, because the lies that are at the foundation of America. And I was about to say this about one of the things that has allowed Sun Ra to in his music to endure. When he left Birmingham, Alabama, and had the limited kind of access to literature, he went to Chicago where he had access. And that helped him to transform himself from Herman Sonny Blunt to Sun Ra.
Yes.
And he then created this thing called the Myth Science Orchestra, because he said Black folks didn't say orchestra, we said orchestra, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you dig? So he did that, but he created something that has endured for 71 years, right? He created an institution that endured because of the fact that it was counter. He understood something about mathematics. And he said, if you got mythology over here, a mythocracy, which is what he called America, then you gotta have, you know, you gotta have a myth science orchestra over here, right?
Yeah.
And that's what he did to balance it out. And that's why the band is still here. You know, he was very, very, very understanding of spiritual concepts and realities. Yeah.
Right. I like the way that you begin each chapter with a saying, a maxim from Sun Ra that sets the tone, so that it's you're hearing Sun Ra throughout the entire book. One of the things I wanted you to talk about is some of the highlights, some of the jazz musicians that you interacted with, that you had an opportunity to meet. And what did that tell you? How were they connected with the Sun Ra Orchestra? Why was that really, why did he choose those artists and your own personal interaction, as well as your own personal interactions with them?
Well, people, you know.
I just want to also add, as I was listening to it, it made me go back and put on Pharoah Sanders, you know, the creator has a master plan, and put on John Coltrane and Max Roach. I wanted to listen to them and think about them in a different way.
I think also the key to our liberation as a people is in the music of the 1960s and 1970s.
Like the Black Arts Movement. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And in that movement, especially the movement that I was involved with, that's called the Loft Movement, was one of the movements that was suppressed. Because artists were involved in it. And because artists have to tell the story because we were involved in it. And the fact that we don't have too many representations of what was going on in that era. Yeah, this becomes one of those. It becomes one of the ways that we can understand something about what relationship artists had with each other, how we still have work to do around that. You know, and but if the story is not told, we can't complete the work. You see what I'm saying? You know, and so the fact is that the story has not been told. And look at what has happened in the 1980s. We had Ronald Reagan come on the scene, and, you know, and we had a completely different reality that we were dealing with. The fact is that America has always been this country that is taking labor free. Yeah. And we have always been people who have been victimized by it. So whether it's in the arts or whether it's in other forms of labor, you know, we're still dealing with the foundational reality of America. And my feeling is that we're in a third reconstruction right now, and a chance to actually deal with the faulty foundation of this this country. And the arts are the way to do it. Now, the Loft movement was a period in time from the 1960s until the late 1970s, where artists decided that we were going to really determine our own future, determine our reality. And we were going to do it by building institutions that would allow us to do what we needed to do. Lofts were those places where we could do it. So people called it loft jazz. I call it a loft movement because it was a movement. And it was people were organized around, you know, the reality of our existence. Right. And so it's a very important thing. Yes, I met some wonderful people, Blewett, Farrell, David Murray, Oliver Lake, all of these people, Olu Dara, Wadada Leo Smith, Lester Bowie, all of these people were part of this movement at this particular time. And with it, and Tazaki Shange did Colored Girls at Studio Rigby before it was on Broadway. Yeah, so there was a whole mix of folks who were there, and that's why the story is so important, because it hasn't been told.
No, it hasn't. As I was reading it, I thought about the stories that Sonia Sandes often tells about how they would get together, Max Roach, Max and Amiri, and they get together and just talk into the night or just play music. And you've concretized that in this book. And I had never thought of it as the Loft Movement. One of the things that I wanted to get your reaction to is because there are a group of hip hop artists who I see doing similar things in the sense of creating these communities, creating spaces where they all come together and support each other. And they also are the truth tellers of their generation. Absolutely. And I just wanted to get your reflections on it. I see them building on what came out of the Black Arts Movement, that sense of community and bringing all of the arts together.
Yeah. And I think that I think that you're absolutely right. In fact, I listened to your and watch your son's podcast quite often. I think he's one of the brilliant ones in as far as that generation of artists is concerned, who are trying to move things forward in another kind of way. But there isn't a lot of information that they have to build on. They've been doing it themselves without having any information. I think it's something that's in our spirit, and we are going to do it no matter what. But what a greater job we can do if we know more. You know what I'm saying? If we have the information of the generation that preceded us. Certainly that's one of the things that one of the great advantages I had in working with Sun Ra was that he would tell us, you got to go back and hear Red Allen, you got to go back and hear this one, man, because you think that it just happened yesterday. It didn't. There's a whole continuum of artistry that you got to be avail yourself of to be able to be this person I want in my organization. Like that.
I just want to quickly add, though, Ahmed, that one of the things that we try to stress in the building of institutions is that you have to start where you are. So we talked about the fact that we've been married for 31 years and we've been doing this work collectively for that time. But you mentioned Studio Riv B. The B part of that was the person who actually booked the musicians into Studio Rigby. So a lot of the time in terms of our story, the part that women have played and other people have played in the movement, in making this a reality, is not always seen. Longevity is key Sun Ra's, you know, the Sun Ra Orchestra played at the Hollywood Bowl, playing at the Hollywood Bowl tonight. This is critical in terms of us being able to do the work and passing it on to the next generation, which is why it's important for women artists and artists to tell their own story. We need to not any longer allow other people to tell the story, because they miss the nuances. They miss some of the real nitty gritty of what we need to say.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Just underscoring that the longevity and the importance of women artists and telling stories. That's really critical. So as we come to a close, would you just want to share one of the highlights, something that was a highlight in writing this memoir? And Monique, you were very often the inspiration behind keeping this going, helping Ahmed to keep going. And also, you're an artist in your own right. So why don't we just have each of you just share a highlight in the story, the Celestine, the strange Celestine Road?
Yeah, there on page 120. I think that this is something that in reflecting on the book, I came back to understand something about why it is being published today. You know, the I'm talking about the fact that Sun Ra, he would say he was an angel. He said he wasn't man or woman, right? But certainly people would look at him as being queer, yeah? Different, yes. Certainly. And certainly that energy, that feminine energy, that creative energy is so important to where we are today, which is why I wanted Monique to be on this program, because I wanted people to understand that we are working like that, and we are working together. And that is the kind of effort that I believe is needed to change things in this country. I mean, if we look at the fact that we went through an election where you had this person who was completely inept and he became the president, and you had a person who was overqualified and she was a woman, yeah, but people chose the inept male as opposed to the overqualified woman. And what did he do? He shut down the world. All of the arts were shut down as a result of this person and his insanity. You see what I'm saying? So this is the kind of thing, if we look deeply and understand what we are faced with, it is about bringing women forward, bringing that feminine energy forward. And I believe that is why this book is being put out there at this time.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I mean, I would say that we're partners. I mean, when I met Ahmed, I was a writer. And he was a musician. I'm now a musician, and he's a writer. So we partnered in our artistic journey. It may be a little self-serving, but my favorite part of the book is the introduction, because I'm right there on the first page, and it's the part where Ahmed gets a call from me, where I tell him that his mother has passed away. It's a moment that changed my life, because after that, I flew to New York to be with him at his mother's funeral. And in less than a month, on April 17th, we were married, and we've been married for 31 years. So we built an institution from that moment, and we met at a Sun Ra Orchestra concert. So we're kind of orbiting around Sun Ra in terms of our world. We also... I mean, we speak Sun Ra speak, so we give up our deaths, which means really to understand that the body is but a vessel that contains our spirit. And when our bodies are gone, the spirit still continues.
Thank you. What a wonderful way to close this discussion of a strange celestial road, my time in the Sun Ra Orchestra. And both of you illustrate, as you said, what Sun Ra was doing. And I can see that you are definitely soulmates. And that's part of the culture and the spirit of Sun Ra. So I just want to remind our listening audience that I have been in conversation with Ahmed Abdullah and Monique Nzogi Nira, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. We've been discussing a strange celestial role of my time in the Sun Ra Orchestra. I encourage you to purchase this book. It's long, but it's not something you have to read in one sitting. You know, you can read it and sit back. And as I said, I like listening music when I read it, or just reflecting on all the memories that it brings. So I really thank you for really sharing this very important story. And remember the
website. You can check it on our website for upcoming readings, ahmedian.com. And all of our upcoming readings are on the website.
Right. Could you repeat the website?
It's ahmedian.com. So ahmedian.com.
Okay. Thank you. You're and get the book.
Yeah. And thank you. Thank you for having us
thank
and
you.
Doing this and for all you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, well, thank you so much.
Yes. Remember, the writer is always reading. The reader is always writing. Keep reading and writing. Empower yourselves as readers and writers. And this radio show is paid for by Megar Evers College. Thank you.